Hello, good morning, or good evening, whatever the time it is. Here we're going to go over this study guide. I'm going to go through this quick so you can pause and write down whatever you need to. But let's just go through this real quick. First and foremost, Articles of Confederation. What you need to do understand is the Articles of Confederation was the first U.S. Constitution. Obviously, it was not good because we don't practice or we don't use it anymore to organize our government, and it had four major weaknesses. One, the strength of the central government was weaker. The state governments had most of the power, and the central government had no authority or control over these states, so they act like 13 independent little countries with their own currencies, their own trading, their own tariffs, so on and so forth. Second, the United States government, the central government, could not collect taxes, and that basically did not allow them to be able to make roads, create buildings, and more importantly, the next weakness was pay off war debts from the Revolutionary War. Because they could not pay off the war debts, obviously they were not able to pay back the people who borrowed money from them, like France and Spain, as well as Revolutionary War soldiers. So they ended up resorting to giving them these Western lands, most of these states did. And that, of course, led to other issues with the Northwest Ordinance. And the last one, the last major weakness was national security. The United States government, after the Revolutionary War, they disbanded the National or the Continental Army. They didn't have enough money to maintain the army. And because of that, this allowed them or made them susceptible or made them weak to international foreign attacks from either Native Americans, the British, or even domestic insurrections, domestic rebellions from their own people, namely Shays' Rebellion. So what did Shays' Rebellion show about the strength of the Articles of Confederation? It showed that the national government had no power or might. They could not stand on their own two feet. They didn't have enough money or resources to maintain a national army. And they couldn't put down this rebellion of farmers in Massachusetts. They couldn't come to the assistance of Massachusetts, and these farmers almost took over the entire state of Massachusetts. And of course, what did it show a need for? For many people in the United States, it showed that the Articles of Confederation were too weak. To just change them, to alter them slightly, would not be enough. You had to essentially start with a whole new constitution. So that's why they started over with the U.S. Constitution. Now, the U.S. Constitution, in the process of writing it, had numerous compromises. We're going on to the next topic. They had the Three-Fifths Compromise, the Slave Trade Compromise, and the Great Compromise. Starting with the Three-Fifths Compromise, both the Three-Fifths and Slave Trade Compromise dealt with slavery. Three-Fifths Compromise dealt with the issue of how to determine or how to use slaves towards a state's population, because at that time the legislature, specifically the House of Representatives, their representation was based off a state's population. Many southern states, specifically the Carolinas and Georgia, wanted to use their slave populations so they could gain more representatives in the House and therefore more political power. But the northern states, of course, did not want this because they felt this was wrong. They did not treat them as normal citizens. They treated them like nothing more than, like, say, cattle or a piece of property. So they didn't feel it was right for the southern states to, in a sense, manipulate using the slaves for their own political benefit. So they gave a compromise, the compromise that a slave was worth 3/5 of a person. The Slave Trade Compromise, what that basically did was, this was a dispute between northern and southern states, and the dispute over this was whether to allow the slave trade to keep going on in the United States. Northern delegates wanted to ban the slave trade outright, saying that this was an immoral, terrible act, while the slave states said that we are too dependent on the slave trade. You know, it's all about business, it's all about money, it's all about economics, let's leave morality out of this. So they decided to compromise. Their solution to the slave trade was to ban the slave trade after a 20-year period. So the Constitution of Convention was in 1787. They rounded 20 years up to 1808. So that was, you know, technically 21 years later. The Great Compromise dealt with the legislature of the national government, specifically U.S. Congress. The decision, you had two different plans. One was the New Jersey, the other one was the Virginia plan. The New Jersey plan was supported by small states, meaning they wanted to kind of keep what the Articles of Confederation said, you know, one state, one vote in Congress. However, larger states said this was unfair because they had a larger population. This was not fair because, you know, their representative was representing the needs of more than one more people than, like, say, smaller states, and it was not fair from a politically moral standpoint. So what they did is they made the Great Compromise. They combined the two plans, and, you know, going down the list, they created a bicameral legislature, a two-house legislature. The first house, the lower house, was the House of Representatives. The representation was based off population, what the larger states wanted. And in order to kind of satisfy the wants and demands of the smaller states, they created the U.S. Senate. This was actually considered the upper house, but the U.S. Senate, it just kind of said that each state, regardless of population or size or wealth, had two senators per state. So these are the three specific compromises you need to know. Regarding the principles of the U.S. Constitution, there's five major ones. Representative democracy, basically. People elect officials to make political decisions for them. All of these ideas, you have to understand, all of these ideas, what they're trying to do is contain the power of the central government to kind of limit its power. And representative democracy, what that gets at is, you know, we elect officials into office. They make decisions for us. If we do not like their decisions, what the people can do in terms of limiting their power is vote them out. So, for instance, you know, if you did not like what Barack Obama was doing, if your parents didn't like what Barack Obama was doing, and enough people did not like what Barack Obama was doing in 2012, you know, the people could unite, vote together, and vote for somebody else in office. Federalism. I love federalism. Federalism is basically when the power of the central government is, or the power of government in general, is divided and shared between both the state and the national government. And the concept here is to kind of contain the power of the central government so they do not become too tyrannical or abusive. You know, they have shared powers. The one common shared power between federal or the central government and state governments is both tax. So both governments have the power to tax. Even our local government in Huron has the power to tax us. If you look at, if your parents were ever allowing you to see one of their pay stubs, you're going to see that they have taxes taken out both at the local, state, and national level. So it's a federal power. It's a shared power between all both governments. Next is separation of powers. What this essentially allowed to occur was the government, the power of the government was split into three separate branches: the executive, legislative, and judicial. What the executive did was they were the ones who enforced the laws. So think of it like the executive, you know, at the national level would be the president. He's like, you know, the head honcho of the police. You know, he enforces the law, makes sure everybody's abiding by the laws. And, of course, if they don't, you know, they take care of it. They look out to, like, arrest or detain or punish this person. The legislature makes the laws. So they write up laws and literally vote to pass these particular laws. And the judicial branch, they do what's called interpreting the law. They decide whether a law passed by both the legislature and the signed by the president is constitutional or not. If it's unconstitutional, you know, then they then they basically bar the law from being enacted. And this goes with checks and balances. Checks and balances, each branch, both the legislative, executive, and judicial, are given additional powers to guarantee that no one branch becomes too powerful. All right. So if you look at the legislature, they, of course, Congress makes the laws. All right. The president, he or she someday, ladies, has a choice of whether or not to sign the law. He can either sign it, which means that it actually officially becomes a law, or he can veto it, which means that, you know, it could stop there. But then you have like your last line of defense is the judicial branch. If the judicial branch, namely the Supreme Court, did not like a law or they felt that the law was unconstitutional, they can rule it unconstitutional and therefore the law would stop there completely. Last one is bicameralism. This goes back to the Great Compromise, creating a two-house legislature. In our legislature, we have the House of Representatives and the Senate. Another way that the Constitution tried to limit the power of the government was by passing a Bill of Rights. I want you to know Amendments 1, 4, 5, 6, and 7. The First Amendment is individual freedoms, freedom of speech, religion, press, petition, and assembly. The Fourth Amendment is right to privacy. And if you wanted like the technical name for it, it's no illegal search and seizure. So that's what it is. For instance, the government can't come in, search through your private property without your consent or without probable cause or a search warrant. The Fifth Amendment is due process of law and right to legal counsel. What this basically means is, you know, if the government wants to arrest you because they believe that you violated a law, you committed a crime, that they have to follow a certain procedural steps in order to punish you. So they have to inform you of your rights, let you know what you did wrong, they have to provide you legal counsel, and they have to respect your wishes if you wish to remain silent. So they have to follow all these steps in order to punish people in the United States. The Sixth Amendment, what that allowed to happen was that if somebody was arrested for a crime, that they had a right to a speedy, public, fair jury trial. They couldn't just detain people, incarcerate people indefinitely without giving them a trial, so this had to be provided for them. The Seventh Amendment is the right to a civil court or a civil trial, meaning if somebody does you harm, you have the right to, in a sense, sue that person or entity or institution and receive some sort of compensation. Going down, due process of law. Due process of law basically gets at this, that the government must go through certain procedural steps in order to arrest you. So everybody is held equally under the law. Going down, what are the beliefs of the Federalists? Federalists were the people who believed in a stronger central government, that there needed to be a single person running the executive branch. They referred to this person, of course, as a president. And these are the major beliefs of the Federalists. Also, of course, that executive branch, they believe that the executive needed to have the power to enforce laws. The government as a whole had to enforce laws. Under the Articles, you know, if you remember, the government could make laws, but they couldn't enforce them. So that's what the purpose of the executive branch. Regarding the Anti-Federalists, they had several main beliefs. The first one is these were the people who supported the concept of a Bill of Rights. They were the ones who really wanted to control and contain the power of the central government. And a lot of those ideas, you know, the principles of the U.S. Constitution, they were the ones who were really pushing for these ideas to be created. So, for instance, they believed that they were afraid of a strong executive branch. They wanted to guarantee that the states had more power than the central government. Bill of Rights, obviously, they wanted to guarantee people's individual citizenship rights. So these are the ideas that anti-federalists were getting at. The last idea, which I made you write on the back of your paper, was the Northwest Ordinance. This goes back to the times of the Articles of Confederation. These 13 states were claiming lands west of the Appalachian Mountains, and this ended up creating disputes. You know, states were claiming the same lands, and they were, you know, butting heads over who actually had ownership of these lands, because, you know, land at that time equaled money and power. So more land you had, the more power and money you'd have. So what they the national government did under the Articles of Confederation, they passed the Northwest Ordinance of 1785-1787. This basically said that this was this land was not to be claimed by any single state, and that this was a way to kind of organize the land for Western settlement of the American citizens. What it did was it organized the land for settlement by creating townships. These townships, if you remember, these were these 6x6 or 36 square mile grids. And it did numerous things for the people. You know, every block 16, people were given, you were supposed to create a school in that box 16. So everybody had a right to an education. Slavery was banned. In every box 7, you were supposed to build a church. So that promoted this concept of freedom of religion, which was eventually put into the First Amendment of the Bill of Rights. So, you know, this was a very novel, progressive, some people would even say radical law, and it really did help organize the land that we live in today, the land of Ohio, Michigan, Indiana, Illinois, Wisconsin. So, do me a favor, all right? Think hard over this. Do not just write all this information down, put it in your folder, and forget about it. Look over this. Study each one. If I were you, I would just chunk each one. Take like a major heading and just focus on that main heading. All right? Go over it seven times in a 5-minute period. Really try to get it in your head. This test, it should not be that difficult for you, but if you do not study, that my fear is you guys won't do well. And of course, I obviously want you to do well, because I want to save my red marker and pens from having to write comments all over your test. A happy teacher is a happy life for you guys. So take your job seriously, study hard, study critically, and good luck on the test on Thursday. Have a good night.